It's all about food. I've covered a number of different topics recently. I've talked about having courage and kindness. And most recently, I talked about truth, especially truth with respect to your own life, living your own truth. And it all ties in with food. Today, I want to talk about patience, because patience is so important when we want to make change in our own lives and change in the world. Things take time. And I think that things will be more long-lasting, the things that we want to achieve, the things that we want to accomplish, if we take time in preparing, organizing, and planning to get things done. As you may know, my dad died recently on November 22nd of last year. And one of the things that we loved about him was he had many favorite expressions. And the week that he was in the hospital before he passed, he added one more expression to his long list. And that was, no rushing. Now, he used it because he was very weak and tired, and we were trying to get him to eat and especially hydrate and drink. And often I would bring the cup up to his lips and he would say, no rushing. He needed to move slowly and in his own time. And I've taken that expression, no rushing, and I'm using it all the time, because it's important to be mindful in every moment and think about what it is you want and what you want to achieve. And know that in the grand scheme of things, there really is no time. There is no time. You have all the time you need to do the things you want to do. It just takes patience. No rushing. So let's not rush through this hour today, okay? No rushing. And talk about patience. And I'm going to tie this all in with food, I promise you. You may also know that I'm a singer. I've sung around the world in opera and musical theater. And when I sing, from time to time, people will come up to me, they'll thank me and give me compliments, which is always very lovely. And sometimes they will tell me that I have talent. And I want to respond to that thought and say that it's not talent, it's work. It's still work. I'm still singing and I'm still practicing, and it takes a lot of patience. It takes time, practice, persistence, patience. When I was younger, I decided I wanted to win a vocal competition, and I worked hard at it. I did many different competitions, and I lost a lot. But I also won two international competitions, one in Clermont-Ferrand, France, Clermont-Ferrand, and in South Africa. So my point is, it's practice, and practice requires patience. I also remember when I started learning yoga, and I learned yoga from doing video programs. I had three or four tapes that I watched over and over. They were part of the Yoga Journal series with Rodney Yee and Patricia Walden. And I remember something Patricia Walden said in one of the tapes, and I'm sure many yoga instructors and many people have said this over time, but she said, it's the consistency of practice that matters. So if you only have 10 minutes a day to stretch and do some exercise, use 10 minutes a day. It will matter. It will be helpful. It's healthier. It will make a difference. I always think I want to exercise for 2 hours a day. That's like my dream, to have 2 free hours to work out, to take my time, not to rush, and do the things that I enjoy doing, maybe some things that I don't enjoy doing, but get it all in. And I just don't have 2 hours a day for exercise. I try and incorporate movement in so many things that I do so that I get in the exercise. But if I don't have 2 hours a day and I find I only have 20 or 30 minutes, then I do 20 or 30 minutes. Again, it's the consistency of practice that matters. So that requires patience. And this is not what our culture teaches. We live in a fast-paced world where everyone wants instant convenience, things that you can grab and go and move on and do more. And I want to encourage you to take control of your life within the parameters of our culture, but to be more mindful, realize what it is you're doing, where you're going, why you're doing it, and breathe. Breathe in and out consciously, mindfully, and don't rush. Now, let's get on to how this connects with food. I think I've noticed when I talk to people about food, there have been two big issues that people have. Many people want to lose weight, whether it's 100 pounds or that little last 10 or 5 pounds to get to that ideal weight. People struggle with weight. The other thing is people struggle with is digestive issues. And there's a big range of what that means. And we're learning more and more about digestive issues and how important digestion is, how important the microbiome is in our stomach, in our intestines, and it plays a significant role in our well-being. Okay, so weight and digestion. And many times when people try a new diet, a new kind of eating in order to lose weight, either they have new digestion problems or they find that the digestion problems they had before are now exacerbated, intensified. So I want to talk about digestive issues, the myths and the truth, and how it requires courage, kindness, and patience to heal and deal with this issue. Okay? Let's talk about food combining. The first thing I want to tell you about food combining is it is a myth. It's a myth. Food combining, and maybe some of you are saying, no, I know I have some issues and there are certain foods that I can't eat with other foods and it works for me. And I'm going to tell you that if something works for you, great, you keep doing it. But I'm going to tell you what the science tells us. Number one, whenever we take on some kind of new diet, or we decide to try the food combining guidelines, or when people read the book Eat for Your Blood Type and wanted to follow some of the guidelines in that book, I want to tell you before I say any more, Eat for Your Blood Type, the premises that are put forth in that book are not supported by science. I am not promoting that book. That's my disclaimer. Okay. But when people read these guidelines and believe that they're going to bring some sort of wellness and improve some of the inflammation or the discomfort that they're experiencing, there is a placebo effect. And the placebo effect is powerful. If you believe something, oftentimes it'll come true what you believe. The amazing impact of the sugar pill, the placebo effect. So some people will believe that if they eliminate certain foods or don't combine certain foods, they get relief. The other thing is that when you're undertaking a mindful, ritualized approach at mealtime. When you're thinking about what you're eating and you have some guidelines about what to eat and what not to eat, oftentimes you get a benefit from that because you're paying attention to what you're eating rather than just grabbing, eating, and going. So many of these diets will give you benefits. The Eat Right for Your Blood Type diet, for example, which again, I am not promoting. There's no science behind it. It does recommend a number of beneficial things like eliminating refined foods, white sugar and white flour foods. So anybody that moves from a diet of highly processed foods to more whole foods is going to find relief. Great. Now, the food combining theory said a number of things. And again, I'm going to keep saying I do not promote food combining. It is a myth. Food combining tells you to eat fruit alone, to pair protein with non-starchy vegetables, and to pair starches with healthy fats and vegetables. Leafy greens and non-starchy vegetables go with everything, and water should be drunk separately from meals. And they also promote eating minimalist meals or mono meals, where you're just eating one food at a time. Okay, those are the guidelines. And again, it's a myth. I'm not going to go into the digestion process right now, but you can read about it online. It's complicated. We're learning new things about it all the time. What I do want to say is the body is powerful, and there are lots of incredibly strong digestive fluids that are used to digest our foods. And the body has no problem digesting different things at the same time. Take the legume, for example, or any plant food for that matter. All plant foods have carbohydrate, fat, and protein. The bean has protein, carbohydrate, and fat. It's a very healthy food. And if we're supposed to not pair protein with, I can't even follow these guidelines sometimes. If we're supposed to not pair protein with a starchy vegetable, then a lot of vegetables couldn't be digested. It's nonsense. All right. So food combining is a myth, but there are many people that have digestive problems. And if they follow the food combining guidelines, some people may actually find some relief. And why is that? Well, maybe because they're being more mindful, and maybe they've discovered certain foods that they shouldn't eat, and or maybe because they're not combining certain foods with other foods, they're eliminating actually eating certain foods. I don't know. All I know is there's no science behind it. And the other thing I want to say is that everyone is absolutely individual, which makes it very difficult when you go to a doctor's office and say that you have a certain kind of problem. Because the doctor is not you. The doctor does not have your microbiome, nor is the doctor able to examine you based on the wide gut flora that you have, which is unique to you. So if you do have digestive issues, there really is only one thing you can do. Now, you can work with a functional doctor who's familiar with working with people with the digestive issues, who may be helpful in guiding you along. But again, it's really up to you. I found what I believe is the best thing to do in this case is an elimination diet. And this is where patience comes in, and this is why I began the show talking about patience. The elimination diet is when you eliminate the foods that are commonly known to cause a problem, that are allergenic, and then to add to that list other foods that you know you have a problem with. And what you do for 3 to 4 weeks is you don't eat any of those foods. And then slowly, patiently, You add back one at a time over a 2 to 3 day period each one of these foods and see how you respond. If you have symptoms that return, and hopefully over the 3 to 4 week period while you're doing this elimination diet, your symptoms are becoming minimal or going away. And when you add back the foods, if the symptoms return, aha, you know that food is a problem and you don't eat it. It's kind of simple, but it requires patience, and only you can make this determination. But no pain, no gain, right? And it's not an expensive, costly process. It just takes time and it just takes patience. I've mentioned this a number of times before, but digestion starts in the mouth. And since it starts in the mouth, we want to chew mindfully, chew slowly, chew carefully, and chew long enough to fully masticate, to fully grind up the food that you're eating to a liquid with the digestive juices in your mouth before sending it on its way through the throat, the esophagus, the stomach, the small intestine, which is about 20 feet long, and then the colon, which is another 5 to 6 feet long, and then finally some of it comes out through the rectum and the anus. And that's the path it takes for food to be digested. You know this. We all know this. And yet, the food combining people will tell us that certain foods take 20 minutes to digest or 45 minutes to digest. And I'm going to tell you that that is ridiculous. It takes about 24 to 72 hours for food to get through all of that stuff from the beginning to the end. So whether you believe in food combining or not, I hope that you're courageous and kind and patient with yourself in solving your own issues regarding well-being. Just to review, with the elimination diet, the most allergenic foods are dairy, eggs, peanuts, tree nuts, fish, soy, and wheat. And then there are many other foods that may be problematic for you. For example, there are foods that are called FODMAP. Have you heard of FODMAP? I recommend going to my nonprofit website, and searching on Joe Stepaniak. That's Stepaniac. And she's a longtime vegan. She's written numerous cookbooks. She's a lovely person, and she struggles with the autoimmune condition IBS. And she put out a book called Low FODMAP and Vegan. Now, FODMAP is a list of foods. They're short-chain carbohydrates that are poorly absorbed in the small intestines. And FODMAP is an acronym because we don't want to remember all of the things that it stands for. It stands for fermentable oligodimonosaccharides and polyols. FODMAP is easier to remember. And many of us have no problem eating foods that are considered high FODMAPs, but some people do. And if you do have digestive issues, it would be good to go online, search for a list of foods that are high in FODMAPs, F-O-D-M-A-P. And if you're doing an elimination diet, you might want to eliminate these foods as well. It's a big list, but you know, the plant kingdom is vast, and there are many low FODMAP plant foods that you can consume. So if you want to, you can listen to my interview with Joe Stepaniak, and you might even want to get her book, Low FODMAP Vegan. Low FODMAP and Vegan is her book, with lots of delicious recipes. So there are many foods out there that can be problematic to individual people. Now, there is hope. And many people have found ways to deal with this issue and heal. I like to say deal and heal. It requires patience. which is what we're talking about today. So if you do have digestive issues, the first thing is the elimination diet. Find out what foods you cannot eat or give you significant problems. Okay, once you've gotten to a level of peace with digestion and you find the foods that you can consume that don't give you much problem, then you might want to try adding back certain foods. Now, this can be very complicated if you have severe inflammation, and it's probably good to work with a medical expert who has a lot of experience with this, but many times probiotics are recommended. The thing is, you do want to consume the foods that are health-promoting and boost the immune system. And this is where there's a catch-22, because when your gut is significantly inflamed, when you have a leaky gut, for example, and you have intestinal permeability, and stuff is getting into your bloodstream undigested and wreaking havoc, this isn't good, and you need to heal that gut lining. And we recommend eating plant foods that are loaded with fiber, but fiber can really irritate the gut lining when you are very inflamed and you have particular problems. So like I said, it's a catch-22. And in this case, what's recommended is consuming cooked vegetables that are pureed. And then when you eat them, you chew them a lot first. And in addition to cooked pureed food, you can have some raw juices where the fiber has been extracted. And many of you know the difference between juice extracting and blending, but I just want to repeat here, if you have a Nutribullet or a Blendtec or a Vitamix, these are great tools. I use them all the time. They blend and they mix all of the things in the whole food together, including the fiber. Now, they do break open the cell walls and make foods easier to digest, but they do not remove the fiber. Juicing does that. And depending on the juicer you have, some juicers extract juice and separate the juice from the fiber more efficiently than others. I use a Breville Juice Plus Elite, something like that. I've had it for about 11 years. I've only replaced the mesh filter or strainer, whatever you call it, but it's lasted me and works very well. But what I like to do is when I push the vegetables through and the remaining fiber and pulp is collected in a container, I like recycle that. I put that back in the juicer several times to get more juice out of it, because this particular juicer isn't as efficient as some others that really separate the juice from the fiber very well. But when you juice, for those that are sensitive to the fiber, you will still get the powerful nutrients from the leafy green vegetables, the minerals from the celery, and the flavonoids from the lemon skin, and whatever else you put in your juice. And that can help heal. And that can help heal so that ultimately you can incorporate more fiber foods, which will ultimately restore the health to your gut. So, there's that. And then many, many people talk about having problems eating beans, especially when moving from a standard American diet, SAD diet, to a plant-based diet. And many courageous and kind people are wanting to eliminate animal products from their diet. Many people are learning every day how horribly cruel, environmentally polluting, and inefficient our food system is, how horrific animal agriculture is, and many of these wonderful people want to make a difference in their own lives, and they decide to reduce or eliminate the animal foods and move to a more whole foods, plant-based diet. Hooray! I applaud you and I want to help you. And then some of you may be consuming these beans and noticing, oh my God, I'm gassy and I'm bloating and this just doesn't feel good and it's embarrassing. I know. What you need to do, as my dad said, was no rushing. Go slowly. Take your time. Be patient. When you're trying a new food, if you find it gives you some sort of indigestion or discomfort, don't eat that much of it. For beans, for example, here's what I recommend. You buy a can of beans. You rinse them. You put them in, divide it up into maybe 5 different containers. And you put 4 of them in the freezer, and the one container you keep in the refrigerator. So let's see, I'm doing the math here in my head. There's about a cup and a half of beans in a can. So you're going to have, maybe like a quarter to a third cup, 4 or 5 tablespoons of beans. Let's say you have 5 tablespoons of beans in each container. So each day, you consume a tablespoon. See how you do with a tablespoon. If a tablespoon gives you discomfort, then have 2 or 3 beans. See how many you can eat without having any discomfort. And then do that every day. And then after a week or two, double it and see how you feel. What's happening is your gut is creating the bacteria necessary to digest that food comfortably. But it takes time. It takes patience. Are you getting my drift? You have to do it slowly. So you might try this suggestion where you get the can of beans, you separate it, put some in small containers in the freezer, and you take one out at a time in the refrigerator and consume it as slowly, mindfully, and see how you do. And that might be necessary for different types of beans. You know, there are over 45,000 kinds of legumes on the planet. But after a while, you should be able to consume most beans without a problem. And there are many, many things you can do to make beans more comfortable. I recommended using canned beans to start with because they tend to be very well cooked. And that can be helpful when you have an issue with bloating and gas when consuming legumes. But what really is ideal is to start with dried beans. Organic is best, of course. And you can rinse them, remove them of any little debris or stones, and then soak them. And I would recommend soaking them for at least 2 days, where every 12 hours or so, you change the water. Pour off the water, rinse the beans, add fresh water, and let them soak. And you can let them soak on a counter. You can let them soak in the refrigerator, whatever is comfortable for you. Keep them covered. And then finally, you'll pour off the water, rinse them, and then you can cook them in lots of water. And then try that. And the longer you cook them, the better, especially if you have issues with digestion. Now, lots of people have different tricks where they add a little kombu, which is a kelp sea vegetable. Some people add baking soda. There are a variety of different things people swear by that say help with bloating and gas. I can't say that I have personal experience with any of those things, but you're welcome to try them. And while we're on the subject of digestive issues, I must talk about wheat. And wheat has gotten a lot of bad press. Whatever happened to the image of the land of milk and honey and bread and all of those historical romantic images we have of bread and butter and gatherings? And bread has been like the staple of life for so long. Now, there are lots of discussions about the history of wheat and how we're growing wheat and how wheat has been hybridized in so many ways that it's nothing like it was originally and how it's affecting our digestion. There's also a very serious issue about the glyphosate in the herbicides that are used. And with wheat, especially when wheat is harvested many times, this glyphosate product is used to desiccate the wheat and help in harvesting. And there are more and more studies showing how devastating this is on health and how it's cancer-causing, although lobbyists and governments don't want to admit to this for many, many reasons. The biggest reason, of course, is profit. But all of that aside, wheat has been a big problem in the last few decades, especially with celiac disease, where people absolutely cannot consume gluten of any kind. And gluten is found not only in wheat, but in barley and rye. So for people that have celiac disease, wheat cannot be consumed. But other people are finding that they have an intolerance to wheat, or maybe an allergy to wheat. And I've noticed that I have problems with wheat. But when you do something like an elimination diet, or at least with wheat, I recommend, if you think you have a problem with wheat, to try first to see if it is related to eating refined wheat versus eating a whole grain product that is a wheat product or contains gluten. What do I mean by this? Well, I've discovered, and I have been very patient with my food intake and analyzing what makes me feel good and what doesn't. But it's taken a long time. I've been very patient about this. And I have discovered that I can eat a whole grain like barley or rye or wheat in the form of farro or wheat berries, for example, when they're cooked like a grain, like rice. But I have problems with refined wheat, white wheat, that has been milled with all of the hull and vitamins removed and highly processed with few vitamins and fiber, the kind that's found in pastas and, you know, cakes, cookies, etc. I have a problem with that. But I know that I don't have a problem with gluten, especially in whole foods. So if you think you have a wheat intolerance, I do suggest not consuming any refined wheat and then seeing how you respond to a barley or a farro or a wheat berry, because you may find that you can eat those foods. And those foods are very health promoting if you don't have a digestive problem with them. So they have been linked to reducing risk of heart disease and have helped in controlling weight. These are healthy foods for many people and have served many people for centuries, for a long, long time. There are the paleo people that do not want to consume grains and legumes, saying that people in the Paleolithic era did not eat these foods and they want to live like those, even though the people in the Paleolithic era didn't live very long. So it's not necessarily the best time period to compare to or want to emulate. But there has been evidence that these people did consume grains and beans, but they were grains and beans in a whole food or minimally processed form. And those might be more easily digestible for many people. I hope this has been helpful for you. And if you have any questions or need more information on anything that I've spoken about during this first part of the program, please don't hesitate to send me an email at info@realmeals.org, and I'd be happy to find the answers for you if I'm able, or send you links that may be helpful to you. Now, there are many, many reasons, not just for health, why I encourage people to consume plant foods and not animal foods, as I briefly mentioned before. The raising of animals for food, non-human animals for food, has become a nightmare, has become out of like a horrible sci-fi movie. What we do to non-human animals today to raise them for food for humans is, there are no words, actually. It's horrifically cruel. It's devastating to the environment. And we're discovering more and more that the foods that are made from these innocent animals, these innocent exploited animals, is not healthy. I'm just reading today that our current administration here in the United States, officially withdrew an Obama-era rule that would have set higher standards for the treatment of animals whose meat could be sold as organic. And this rule, created under the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, was going to require that chickens be housed in spaces large enough to move freely and stretch their wings. You know, you may know that these birds have been confined either in cages or in factories where there are so many crammed on the floor that they just cannot move. They cannot spread their wings. They live in excrement and filth. And this is either for the animals who are raised for meat, but it's the same too with the egg-laying hens. And livestock would have been required to have some access to outdoor space year-round. Many people feel that when they buy organic meats, there's this underlying assumption that the animals raised in this manner to get the organic certification were treated well. Now, I have to put aside the fact that any animal that is slaughtered for meat can be considered treated well. I don't think killing animals for food is treating the particular animal in question nicely. If you ask them, I don't think they would want to give up their life for your meal. But putting slaughter aside, let's just talk about how they are raised until their life is cut short. Many people believe that those that are considered organic for the organic label are treated well. And in some cases, they're treated better, but there are no regulations that will require improved treatment over the poor, unfortunate non-human animals that are raised for meat in what's considered conventional animal agriculture that doesn't get the organic label. So those that get the organic label are supposed to be fed better and are treated in certain ways, but it's not regulated enough in terms of the space that they're raised in. And this rule would have set higher standards. And we need much better standards for these poor, unfortunate animals that are raised for food across the board. If I was in charge, of course, I would make everyone vegan. But I'm not, and you may be happy about that. So, what can we do when the government is not listening to the people? Because most people you talk to who do consume animals want those animals to be treated well up until the end where they're slaughtered. And even then, they would like the slaughter to be painless. So most of us agree, and yet the government is not listening. They are not listening to the some, I think it was like 45,000 responses, and there were only very few that were supporting withdrawing this new rule. But the people that are behind it are the people that control the money, apparently control our government, and to some degree control us. This is where I want to remind you about being courageous, kind, and patient, and living your truth. If you do not like the way animals are treated in order to get meat on your plate, there's one simple solution. And I'm going to quote another one of my dad's expressions. It's one of my favorites. It may actually be my favorite. If you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem. If you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem. Stop eating the meat. If more people do that, we will see dramatic positive changes. Whatever you can do, stop eating animals. They are treated horrifically. Our government does not support the overwhelming wish of the people to do better and to treat these animals better, there is only one solution. Get these innocent beings off your plate. Okay, in the last part of this program, I want to talk about delicious food, because that's the very, very best part about eating a whole foods plant-based diet. By eating plant foods, the plant kingdom is vast. Herbs and spices and so many different fruits and vegetables and beans and grains. It's just endless and just amazingly tasty. We recently heard that the James Beard Foundation was hosting an event, Women Chefs Rule the Vegan Edition, presented by Women Chefs and Restaurateurs, and it just took place on Thursday. We mentioned it, I think, a few shows ago that we were going, and we went, and it was fantastic. Now, I have to say it was way out of my budget, but we decided to splurge and go and kind of get the pulse on things at the Beard House. The James Beard House promotes new chefs around the country and the world and invites them to the James Beard House. James Beard was a famous chef, and when he died, this nonprofit organization bought his home and now has events there. And as I would love to go to all of their events, I can't afford it. Number two, and they're never vegan. I think as of last year, they've now had two vegan events. I missed the one last year, and I went to the one this week. My partner Gary and I went. We were very excited. To start with, I had just bought Gary a new winter coat, and I got the coat on sale from a company called Vote Couture. And Vote Couture is a vegan fashion company, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment, but I wanted to say that while we're living our truth, which I think I covered last week, there are so many ways we can do that. And as we dig deeper, we find as consumers, very often we may innocently buy products that support things that we don't believe in. And you have to be mindful about every little thing, and we can't always do that, so we do the best we can. So I start first with food, and I've chosen to buy organic food, preferably as local as possible, but not always, and certainly always vegan. This is my truth. I'm not saying it's yours, but I encourage you to live your truth and determine what that means to you. But for me, my next concern was with clothing. And I don't buy a lot of clothing, not as much perhaps as I used to, and not as much as this country or our culture wants us to do, because many stores offer very inexpensive clothing. And I was raised to always look for a deal, you know, get the best price for things, and really marvel when you got something that you liked that didn't cost very much. But you have to dig deep, and you have to figure out, even though it may not have cost you very much, what was involved to get that into your closet. And unfortunately, very often, there are many people involved that are exploited and treated poorly, paid poorly in factories all around the world, some of them even here in the United States that we may not even know about, that are doing things illegally. So at some point, I said, self, we have to change this. And if we're going to buy clothing, we want to, as much as possible, support companies who do things that we believe in. The difficulty is, and I get it, everybody, the difficulty is it's expensive. It's expensive. So our society has offered us clothing at very, very low prices so that we can continue to buy and buy a lot, but at a big cost, a cost to the treatment of people that are sewing these clothes. And very often these factories are polluting. The creation of the synthetic fabrics that they use are very polluting and use up natural resources, petroleum-based products. This is not good. It's not good on so many levels. So I decided to support Vote Couture. And they had a flash sale, so I did get a deal. But it was still way, way out of my budget. But anyway, I bought Gary a beautiful coat, and it arrived a couple of days before this event, and I couldn't wait for him to wear it out. And he did. And then we got to the James Beard House, and we coat-checked our coats, and we sat down at our table, ultimately. And guess who was sitting at our table? The founder of Vote Couture. Yeah, it was crazy. Her name is Leanne Maley Hilgart, and she's a lovely woman. She actually donated a pencil skirt a few years ago to my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, when we were having the Happy Earth Day review with the Swingin' Gourmets. And it was really a beautiful gift to auction off, and I'm very grateful for that. Anyway, it was amazing that she was seated at our table, and I was just going crazy telling her how much I love the coat. Also seated at our table was Liz D. Have you heard of Liz D? Her grandfather actually started the Smarties Candy Company. Do you know Smarties Candy? The Smarties Candy Roll? And she is now a co-president of Smarties Candy Company. She's also the co-founder and CEO of The Line and Jorn Capital and the founder of Vegan Lady Boss. She's an awesome entrepreneur and business person and was sitting right at our table. There were many wonderful people at our table and at this event, and it was really fun to mingle with them. In fact, they did something that I recommend if you're ever going to organize an event or a party. So before we sat down for dinner, and there were different rooms in this house that were set up with dinner tables for people to sit at. We were in one room that had no table set, and they just squeezed all the attendees in this one room as the servers carefully walked around and served us appetizers, and we could have wine and champagne. But we were packed pretty tight, and you couldn't help but talk to people who were right there next to you, because we were all there for the same reason. So it was an easy opener. What brought you here? And we were all having a fun time eating the appetizers, and the wine flowed a little too freely. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment too. But then we sat down for dinner. They set up a table in the room that we had been standing in once everyone cleared out and sat at their tables. And we sat down at our table. And I was surprised to find that many of the people at this event were not vegan. So we were lucky to have Leanne and Liz at our table, these amazing vegan entrepreneurs. But most people at the event were not vegan. And we met one couple, a woman who is the founder and CEO of a biotech company called Terra. And her husband's a professor of bioengineering at Columbia. And they are curious. They're curious about plant-based eating, and they came to this event. And then another couple on the other side of us, they specified that they were plant-based eaters, and they would probably be vegan, but they're both involved in the food industry. The woman was a pastry chef, and the man worked in hospitality at an upscale hotel. And I guess they find that they have to make food for all of their clients. But at home, they eat plant-based. And they really were enjoying the food. And we were having some really lovely conversations about food, my favorite subject. It was really fun. I haven't been to many of these events, but the few that I have been to, we typically eat before because we know that the food isn't going to either be very good or there won't be very much and we're going to be hungry. And that did not happen at this event. There was an amazing amount of food, and some of it was, all of it was really quite fine. I just want to highlight some of my favorites. My favorite appetizer was a toasted quinoa cake with whipped fava bean hummus, dill oil, and onion flowers. Yum. And then we actually had four different entrees served one at a time, and each dish was served with a different wine. So there was a lot of wine flowing. I'm going to say which one was my favorite, but now that I'm reading all of the choices, I was like, oh no, I like that. Oh no, I like that. One of the dishes had a hedgehog mushroom. Have you ever tried a hedgehog mushroom? I haven't, or I don't remember ever having it. It has a unique texture, and it was served in a Vietnamese yellow curry and had some lovely flavors with it. It has these tooth-like projections rather than gills under the cap surface, and that's what I think gave it its interesting, chewy texture. I want to say it was kind of spongy, but not in a negative way. You'll have to try it to know what I'm talking about. We also had a lovely pan-seared Creole tempeh with toasted quinoa, collard salad, and turnip puree. It was piled high, so there was the turnip puree, the collard salad, and then the tempeh on top. It was stacked. The turnip puree, I don't know what it was, but I really, really loved it. I typically like turnips in other things, like in a soup, for example, but I don't often like turnips on their own. Now, I know there were other things in this turnip puree because it was very comforting and creamy, but so, so good. I have to confess one thing, however, something we didn't prepare for. We've made some commitments, my partner Gary and I, about what we'll do when we go out. And although we love the taste of fine wines, and I particularly like a really good martini or a Manhattan with bourbon, I don't like what drinking does to my physical body. And the next day, I never feel good after drinking. Well, I don't want to say never, because there have been a few occasions where a small amount of alcohol has been fine. And there are all different kinds of studies that come out saying whether drinking alcohol is healthy or not. But I think for the most part, it's best not to drink, or not to drink often. And we kind of forgot when we got to this event, because the atmosphere was so festive and everything was just so easy. And we both drank a lot of wine, a lot of different wines. And when we woke up the next morning, we paid a price. Now, fortunately, that feeling has passed. I drank a lot of water and mint tea, and we rested. Well, actually, I didn't rest. I had to get going and take care of things. But something to remember, I hope we keep that in mind the next time we do one of these festive events. It's okay to sip and try these things, but be mindful about what you're putting in your body. Sometimes the price is more than what you realize up front with how you feel the next day. So that was the Women Chefs Vegan Edition, and it was awesome. I hope perhaps to have some of these women chefs on the show in the future. I really would like to interview some of them and hear about their careers and their journeys and their art. One last thing before we go, I wanted to highlight on my website, Responsible Eating and Living. That's where I live. It's a nonprofit organization that promotes healthy plant foods, and we have recipes and videos, and we archive all of these programs and get them transcribed for you for free. We just posted a new recipe called tempeh tikka masala, and you might want to check that out. It's really quite good. Also, if you want a few more details on this event that I just talked about, and you can see some of the photos of the food, I've posted it all in my daily blog, What Vegans Eat. It's in day 1122. What Vegans Eat, day 1122. Oh, and speaking of my daily blog, I wanted to mention this before with the digestive issues. If you want to discover things about you and your diet and discover the foods that are giving you issues and problems, journaling is a great way to do that. So you write every day what you're eating, when you eat it, and then you keep track of how you feel each day. And then you may find some trends. The thing is, when you eat something, you may not have an immediate reaction. It may take a day or two or three. And without journaling like this, you can't see the trends or you can't remember the trends. So journaling is really wonderful. And I do it publicly. I do it in my daily blog, What Vegans Eat, now over 1,100 posts. And I invite you to check them all out. Okay? Thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food. I've really had fun and I hope you have too. You can always reach me at info@realmeals.org and visit me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. I wish you really good health. Don't forget to chew your food and enjoy it and think wonderful things while you're eating, whatever it is you are eating. Okay? Have a very delicious week. Thank you.